that behavior kind of drove out the whole trading community.
Giving an X, giving an O, giving a P.
Find a different group of people that doesn't mind your ass hattery.
We're going to probably go home crying in the fetal position.
The tryhards and their significant others battle bond showdown. Which team would implode first?
Seems more like a poker game going on.
A couple of times the police have had to been called to the trailer park.
He just doesn't stand out to me as far as a player that's going to do ridiculous things.
He lets me down again. That's just going to have to be me crying in my beer all over.
Oh, you brave soul. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrease, along with Matt Hurley and Brian Tibbetts. This week, it's a Pro Tour Pick'em Week. The pros are about to descend on Richmond, Virginia. We'll tell you what strategy we think may pop off and who we like to take it all down this week. And what are we looking forward to most coming up in Magic? As we get things started this week, along with What Are You Drinking?, take a moment and honor anyone that comes to your mind as we record this on Memorial Day in the States. It's a day where we honor those who have served our country. A special tip of the hat to my Uncle Gary, who served in the Air Force. He's having some health problems now. And my cousin Brian, who also served in the Air Force. And my What Are You Drinking Tonight is in honor of our veteran here on the show. And I'm going to pay for this probably with indigestion. A late evening Bloody Mary in honor of Matthew Hurley. Our veteran here on the podcast. Matt, thank you for your service. We appreciate all you did, all the time you spent abroad in defense of our nation. Matt, I know you're still recovering from a hard-working weekend. What are you drinking on Memorial Day?
I'm going with an old classic, but it's got a little weird spin. It's seltzer water and Seagram's. Since we're on this new diet, we can't have carbs. So it is, seltzer water is the easiest way to do that. And it's not too bad, but I needed something that's light on my stomach because I just drank way too much scotch last night.
Brian, what are you drinking this week?
I am following up with what I ended with yesterday, which is the Bell's Two Hearted Ale, American IPA, a little bit heavier than the all day that I was started with after the gin and tonics, of course. I can just drink these way too fast and too many of them, which is exactly what happened to me last night. So, Hurley, I'm feeling you, but raising a glass here in West Central Illinois to you and to your service, and to my dad, and both of my grandfathers, God rest their souls, and to my father-in-law, Glenn, for their service to the country on this Memorial Day.
Guys, not only is it Memorial Day, but there's another auspicious day that has fallen on the date today. It's National Burger Day. What's your favorite burger topping, Brian?
Absolutely cheddar cheese.
Matt?
Pepper jack cheese.
Onions, mushrooms, and blue cheese is the way I top mine. Onions, mushrooms, and blue cheese. Preferably, you get those like onions and mushrooms a little like caramelized and get ready to go. May we be the topping to whatever you're doing this week as we get ready for this week's episode of Tryhards. Guys, what Magic did you play? Matt, I know you were crawling around in the dirt at the Garden. Do you have any time to play Magic?
The girlfriend's going to be out of town this next week. Actually, she's going to be right near you, Sean. So we had a nice date night Friday night. Didn't get to play then. Hung out with a friend Saturday that we played disc golf, and the one that I play Magic with all the time. And I did watch him draft a little bit. We watched some of the, I believe it was Lorwyn draft. We watched a little bit of that as well. That was on Magic Online. But yeah, I didn't actually play any myself. And you know what? After that abysmal beating I took at the SCG, I was okay with it. And I'm going to jump back in with both feet, hopefully this weekend.
All right, Brian, Matt was still taking a breather after that beating. Did you get to play any Magic this week?
No, I did not. I feel like this might be the longest stretch I've ever gone through on tryhards. And there have been some stretches, but yeah, I have not played any paper Magic. In my defense, we do have finals last week, and tomorrow I've got to give my last finals. So the school year is wrapping up very, very shortly, and hopefully that will free up a little bit more time. The wife is going to be gone out of the country in a week and a half or so. So hopefully I can maybe start slinging some cardboard here when things open up. But unfortunately, no, nothing for me this week. Sean, save us.
I did get down to F&M this week. I made some adjustments to the removal suite that I'm running in what I'm calling now Cycle Mastery. That is the Faith of the Devoted cycling cards plus Lish's Mastery in Standard. It was okay. I think I need to further tweak on that removal package, but the deck still feels powerful. Ended up going 1-1-1, lost a three-game, very close set to Mono Red, won against a very intriguing Mono Blue Mill deck. They were using the new three-drop enchantment that exiles your hand underneath it, and then you draw that many cards, and then he was releasing it to the wind so you don't get those cards back, and it triggers again. And then he had the saga that is the Mirari Conjecture, and he was resetting that, and it was very intriguing, very dirtly. So, Brian, you love Mill. Matt, you love dirtling. You two may need to get together on this list and see if you could improve it. I won that one in three very close games and then ended up going to a draw against Mono Black Control. So I played Mono Grixis, Mono Red in round one, Mono Blue in round two, and Mono Black in round three. It's a very interesting night. But I think I'm getting it kind of honed in a little bit more. And I haven't said this in quite a while in Standard. I'm liking this enough that I'm going to look for an RPPT, QXY, whatever they're called now, and take it to it and see what I can do on a little bit bigger stage outside of FNM. It's got me intrigued, and I think it attacks the metagame from an interesting angle. So we'll see where it ends up going. There was one other thing that happened, and Matt, I need your opinion on this. And Brian, I'm sure we'll have some interesting input as well. I had a run-in with Trades Guy at FNM. I was talking with the LGS owner when I first got there. He came up, interrupted the conversation that we were having to ask if he could look through my binder. This isn't someone that I trade with regularly. I asked him what he was looking for. I said, that's modern stuff. I didn't bring that. We're not playing modern tonight. You can, feel free to look through it. Okay. I said, how do you want to do this? He said, well, usually I just trade like rares for rares or mythics for mythics. And I'm like, okay. So I'm looking through his stuff. I pointed a couple things and now he's not sure what those are worth. So he goes to someone else and starts asking him, what are these cards worth? And I'm like, okay, you were ready to take advantage of me if I, didn't know what was going on here. I thought most of that had been kind of tamped out of the community. Not that he was trying to purposefully scumbag me. I'm an adult. He's an adult. And we were able to trade a couple of cards and everybody felt good about it. But this isn't a behavior, Matt, that we see very much anymore.
And in fact, I don't think I've made a trade in, it's been a long time, unless it's just amongst friends. And unfortunately, that behavior kind of drove out the whole, the whole trading community. That's not that common anymore. And that's probably exactly what was happening there.
Brian, I know you've got a couple of wheelers and dealers at your shop there. Is the mood pretty jovial and community friendly, or are there people who are still looking to angle shoot?
Oh, I think you're going to find the angle shooters everywhere you go, but just like with any good shop with a really good core group of people, they make it known very clearly that, hey, what you're doing isn't cool. Go somewhere else or go find a different group of people within this community that doesn't mind your asshattery. That stuff always just kind of puts me off of trading, period, because I feel like even if I'm going in with both eyes open, and I know that I'm trading with somebody and maybe they have something I want, I just feel kind of dirty coming out of it. It's kind of like somebody, wanting to borrow your car and they're going to fill it up with gas, but they're getting the gas out of that one place that always makes it run a little rough. I don't know. It just is weird. I hope that stuff gets out of the community and people learn from it. And if you are that person, try not to be that person.
The way that people trade now, and I said I haven't made a trade in quite a while, and that's actually not true then now that I think about it. I did trade a card for a card at SCG, and they were equal price. But the reason I made the trade was the guy's like, I need that, and I was like, I'll take that. So the card I traded from him buy listed for $21. They were equal retail price. But the card I took from him buy listed for $21. The card I traded to him buy listed for $16. And I literally was going to sell the card. So just by making that trade, he got what he wanted. It was even retail price, 100%. But I was able to walk up and make an additional $5. That's not scummy at all, but that's how you make these trades anymore, is you buy list, or you look at the buy list margins or the margins you know you're going to make. And you basically trade off of that spread where you're like, okay, hey, I've got these desirable but really slow-moving cards. So the buy list aren't real high on them. I'll trade them for your Teferis, your Karns, your the stuff that has a really high buy list because people are buying them all the time.
And I just wanted to be absolutely clear. There were no hurt feelings with what happened. And I think the sum total value of the trade we made was like $4 at the end of the day. So it was more, me helping him because he was trying to put things together for a deck. And I got a couple things back that I was, tertiarily interested in. But it's one of those things where I'm not using anything that he wanted. So I always try to move those things if somebody in the community wants to use them. Be welcoming whenever you have the opportunity and make a welcoming environment at your LGS. It's going to draw more people in. It's going to give you a bigger, richer, more vibrant community. Speaking of communities, it's time to pay back our Patreon community. Let's howl through this as Brian, you've got an interesting piece of magic history that's going to be on the raffle block this evening.
I do. Howling Mine, one of the original kind of card advantage engines. If, as long as you don't mind your opponent drawing an extra card, just like you're drawing an extra card, during your draw step, you must draw one extra card. And this is revised Mark Poole art. It's got the two little almost like word of command eyes in the middle of like the old stone rune gate. It's really, really cool artwork. So, a revised Howling Mine is up for the lucky Patreon winner this evening.
Matt said we've got 53 eligibles. You've got the list in front of you, Matt. I've got the Tryhards number randomizer all set up here. 1 to 53, 27. Who do we have this week?
Jason Brown. Looks like he's been with us, for about 14 months. So, Jason, congratulations.
Jason Brown.
Jason, I'll get a hold of you, and we will get this shipped off to you ASAP so you can put this in the deck of your choice.
Thanks to Brian, and congratulations, Jason, on the win this week. We'll be back with some more Patreon raffles later this month here on Tryhards. That brings us up to the magic that was played by the greater community this week. Leading into this weekend's Pro Tour, there was GPDC, which was limited, and SCG Minneapolis, which was a modern open. Matt, how did DC shake out heading into Pro Tour Dominaria?
So DC had 534 teams. So that's 1,602 people. The entire thing was taken down by a team that was actually put together the night before the GP. Andrew Tingem, Sokrik, I guess his last name is, and Ingram. They actually walked in and said, hey, how did these guys, what do these guys look like? Because they did not know each other. It was a surprise team. You know, they're all very good players on themselves, but they ended up taking the entire tournament of over 1,600 people down.
Congratulations to that team. What an achievement to put that together. And what chutzpah to show up for an event and kind of plan for it, especially you're looking at a team sealed event heading into the Pro Tour weekend and not having that familiarity of a teammate to build with, to share cards with. This is 3 decks out of 12 packs. That put a lot of stress on him, and to be able to overcome that, build winning decks, and then take the whole thing down, that is quite the achievement. Congratulations to that team, and we're going to get back to some of the limited talk and the hotter players when we have our Pro Tour pick'em. SCG had the Minneapolis Open. It was Modern in the hot seat. Did we see any real movement, as they've had Modern in the spotlight for quite a while now?
I didn't see a whole lot of movement. What I was really shocked about, 783 players showed up for this, and so I was thinking, okay, it's Memorial Day weekend. Maybe people have some more time off, but I kind of had to double check my numbers. I'm like, this isn't a GP. This is just a standard SCG event. So 783 people showing up for Modern shows you just how popular this format is. Taken down by humans, Sam Cocchiarella took down Jonathan Rossum on Jeskai Control to nab the top spot. There were 2 copies of humans in the top 8, 2 copies of Jeskai Control, a copy of Jund, Eldrazi Tron, Burn, Affinity, and then my favorite, Mardu Pyromancer, just missed top 8 in a 9th place finish. 10th, there was an Elves deck. Day 2 metagame kind of shook out the same way. 9 copies of humans, 6 copies of Jund, 5 each of Blue-White Control and Jeskai Control, 5 each also of Affinity and Burn. I was really surprised, guys, that there was only 1 day 2 copy of each of these following decks. And you tell me which one of these is surprising to you. Green-White Hexproof, Blue-Red Gift Storm, and Green-Red Breach. Sean, which of those is like, whoa, there's only 1 copy in day 2?
If I'm going to go, whoa, there's only 1 copy in day 2 lately, it's the Boggles deck. That deck has been doing well lately, and I'm surprised that it only put 1 copy there. Shift, I was surprised there was 1 copy there. That deck really has seemed to have fallen off the radar of a lot of players as a weapon that they want to take into these weekends. The other thing that surprised me was no Pyromancer in the top 8 and no Black Red Hollow One. You say, okay, well, they didn't make the top 8. How else did they do? There was exactly 1 copy of Mardu Pyromancer in the top 32 and 1 copy of Black Red Hollow One in the top 32. Would you put that together for information? was very surprising and may herald a shift in the metagames, with humans being the linear aggro deck of choice now. And now we see the rise of Jeskai in order to combat that. And knowing that, watching the Jeskai Masters work this weekend, Brian, you've played a lot of Jeskai, you've played a lot of Control. I think the time might be right for a single card move from the sideboard to the main, because it deals with your Boggles deck, so a lot of their threats they can present. I think it's time to put EE in the main in these Jeskai decks.
That card is absolutely doing work out of the sideboard. If you can get down even 0-1 and come back, storm back on the back of Engineered Explosives, it's just an absolute beating. It's a house. There's no question about that. But watching guys like Jim Davis play Jeskai Control with all the different tools available in those three colors, I think it's just such a strong deck. And it's not surprising that a deck like Titan Shift is not doing very well, because Jeskai will just eat that lunch all day long. Hurley, any of those decks between Boggles, Blue-Red Giftstorm, and the Titan Shift that you were surprised to only see one copy in the day two?
None of the decks specifically. I think the Blue-Red Giftstorm, I think it's just having a bad run of luck right now. I think it's got the tools to really be a very powerful card or powerful deck. The Blue-White Control, you can see the rise of the Blue-White Controls. A lot of them are running Teferi, the new Teferi, and some of them, or I'm sorry, the Jeskai Controls. That's really interesting. The one card that I expected to see a big jump on was Torpor Orb to combat humans. And I don't really, running through these, I'm not really seeing a lot of Torpor Orbs running around out there. I am seeing some like Damnations in the sideboard. We're back on that rise. And then a lot of people are running Damping Spheres, but the more and more I listen to people talk about it, specifically Jerry T talk about Damping Sphere, the less and less I like it, how it's just kind of like a do-nothing card.
Matt, you're absolutely in the same mental space I'm at with Torpor Orb. Not only is that a card that's good against humans, but you can use it to cut both ways. I played Stifle Knot in Legacy for a while. To bring a Stifle Knot-style deck into Modern that stifles the humans, but also stifles the quote-unquote downside of highly efficient threats on your side of the board, you'll be able to play something like the Hunted series, the black 2-drop 7-7 that when it comes into play makes your opponent 2-3-3 green creatures that have protection from black. They don't get those creatures. It's a 2-drop 7-7. You can play Eater of Days and not have the drawback on it. You could play Scourge of Krug. You could maybe, if you go with a little bigger mana strategy, cheat out something like Leveler. That's a 10-10 for 5 with the supposed drawback of an ETB trigger of exiling your library. Well, if you have Torpor Orb, you just have a 10-10 for 5. You know, and meanwhile, you're stifling their humans triggers. So I don't think it's a great sideboard card, but I think it's a great build around if you're proactively getting a positive, and then the sort of collateral damage is you're shutting down their value triggers.
Maybe they just need to reprint Lord of Tressorhorn into Modern. I mean, that would make work, right?
that would be fine.
Everybody loves
the
a 10-4.
That I saw it in, it was in Carl Johnson's fourth place Eldrazi Tron, which I thought was great. Because the only card it really affects on your side is Thought Not Seer. And so, therefore, it's one of those that it's kind of like, yeah, that's an easy include because of the value you're getting by, you know, shutting down all of the triggers coming in. You're shutting down their freebooters, you know, right there. I think that's just a huge gain.
Well, you're shutting down Reflecting Mage as well.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that you can shut down in the humans list. There are some targets that you can take care of in Eldrazi aggro. We'll see if Torpor Orb starts to creep more and more into sideboards in Modern. Guys, I got to watch just a little bit of Magic coverage over the weekend, and I always enjoy the work that SCG does. There is a small critique that I have of them, and I want to see if you guys have noticed this or if this irritates you at all. SCG has the players that they want to promote. I think that's great, and I have no problem with it. But Magic works on a top 8 basis. That's what we cut to after tournaments. Give me the top 8. When you show the leaderboard and you show the standings, I don't care if they're not in your promoted players. Those players are in the top 8, and they have earned that after X amount of rounds with their record. If you want to just show the players you're promoting afterwards, I have no problem with that. I think it's great that they are building player reputations. But show me the top 8. Am I being too picky here? Or is it annoying to you when you see player 1, player 6, And then like player 32.
The players to watch board mm-hmm. that comes up very often on the SCG coverage is annoying for that very, very reason. Players to watch, I'm like, no, I'm not watching them. What am I watching them for? You're watching them. This is SCG's money-making campaign on the backs of these players. These are the ones that they want to promote on their streams and their articles and things. And that's fine. I get that. But no, when it's a tournament setting, if all of your players to watch are kind of in the losing bracket or not doing all that well, then yeah, focus on the people who are doing well and why are they doing well. I've never understood the players to watch being promoted as much as they are.
I think it's fine if it's truly like, okay, let's watch this player because they have a chance, they have a unique deck, or they have a chance of winning out and top 8ing or something. You know, if it's for performance reasons, or if they're on the SCG leaderboard, this person needs to go 6-3, you know, or to take the top 25 and to be invited to the Invitational type of thing. If that's happening, great, because that builds drama, that builds a story, and that's what SCG wants to promote. But yeah, if it's just they're kind of like their internal pro players, yeah, I mean, just to have them there just for the sake of having them there doesn't do anything.
I always cock my head to the side when at the end of day one, they're still showing the player that went 1-3 and dropped, you know, on their players to watch board on that sort of last slide.
That's 100% true. And then the other case, like when they had who was it that was playing the blue-red Wizards, Ryan Overturf?
Yeah, they had, hometown boy.
He took 484th place, so he didn't do extremely well. But you know what? He had a fun, innovative deck that was very inexpensive. You know what? Yeah, that's fine. Let's do a players to watch on him. Hey, we featured this deck. How's it doing? So that would make sense. You know, this blue-black mill deck that Jeremy Lichtenberger had. He ended up at 297th place. Limited all-star Mandic Scribe in it. Yeah, let's watch that. Let's do that.
I think they do a great job overall with the broadcast. It's just show me the top eight. Do all those other things and show me the players that you want to watch. That's fine. But show me the complete top eight anytime you go to that leaderboard so that I have an idea for who's where in that tournament. SCG also had a Modern Classic along with a Standard one in Minneapolis this weekend. Caleb Shearer turned around that bad luck, as Matt said, for Blue-Red Giftstorm. He took down Rodney Parshall on Black Red Hollow One in the Modern Classic to best 150 other players. It turns out all the Jeskai decks were busy in day two in the open. There weren't any Jeskai decks in that Classic top eight. Standard saw just 86 players. Joshua Egan 2-0'd Max Rockoff. That was Mono Red knocking off White Black Aggro to round out the weekend. Guys, it's going to be a lot of fun. SCG has their regional championships this weekend. Pro Tour is coming up this weekend. We'll start talking about the tech that may be bleeding over into the Pro Tour, or maybe the tech that we're not seeing that we expect to pop up. But before we do that, there is a very cool release coming up in just over a week when this comes out. I am still working to get my Padawan lined up for June 8th when Battle Bond comes out. The two-headed giant set that Magic put their heads together up in Renton and came up with. This has some sweet reprints in it. Notably, Doubling Season is in there. Arena Rector has been turning heads in circles down here. And I really, Matt, love how they did the new dual lands. These will never be able to be used in one-on-one Magic play. They may be legal, but there's no upside to using them. But in multiplayer games, they are functional reprints of everything except for the land types associated with the original dual lands.
I agree with you on those dual lands, Sean. Those are pretty sweet. But I have to correct you on one thing. You mispronounced Battle Bond. It's actually pronounced Commander Masters. That's how it's supposed to be done.
We'll see if we take care of that in post-production.
So Gavin has been very active on Twitter talking about Battle Bond. He helped design it. He did a lot of the work on this. Essentially, from what I'm understanding, they just gave him a blank slate and said, have fun. And I think he just knocked out of the park. This reminds me a lot of the first Conspiracy. I hope that it does a better job of it. But man, these new cards and these reprints in this set are just wow. I mean, even something as simple as Veteran Explorer. First foil Veteran Explorer, yes, please. Mycosynth Lattice, Mystic Confluence, our first true name Nemesis foils. Even Spell Snare and Beast Within. This Sentinel Tower card, that's a new card. that seems pretty awesome. I hope that they're testing the waters for a lot of these cards, and then maybe they'll slip them into like a core set or something, so some of these cards will be legal within Modern. They're kind of Revenant. Most people don't know that was like a $15 card. You know, Seaboard Muse, Greater Good, like just wow. And then just the new cards too. I think this format looks like a ton of fun, and I hope that it doesn't get overshadowed by the upcoming release in about, I want to say, a month and a half of the core sets, because I can't wait to grab my two-headed giant partner and just play the crap out of this set.
This looks like a ton of fun, and I can't agree more with the balance of reprints that they needed to have in this set, along with some really, really good cards, you know, we've never seen before, including those lands that come into play tapped unless you have two or more opponents. I think that's just an ingenious way to get around things like, yeah, it's not a functional reprint of a dual land. But the other thing that has struck me about this is how strong each of the color pies is. And I think that's something going forward where this is going to be a whole lot of fun to play with someone else and to kind of say, okay, how are we going to best utilize colors that we have? Because it's not like you have to lean on one color or another. They're all very, very strong. And I think it's going to be a whole lot of fun to have your partner alongside of you to kind of, you know, open those packs, see what you got, build something really, really fun, and just go to town. So, yeah, this is something I could see playing multiple times also.
So, Brian, I have a very specific question for you.
Sure.
There's some complicated mechanics in here, and the way you draft is very different from the way normal people are drafting. But do you think that this could be something you could take, you know, take your daughter down to and play, since you guys would be a team and you can kind of guide her?
I would be totally willing to do that, just because I think it would be a great kind of bonding experience. And yeah, I would have to do the lion's share of the work to do this, that, and the other. But I think as long as I knew that there were other people down there who would be fine with having like a very, very novice player alongside an experienced player and be okay with that, not, you know, not any kind of high stakes things or whatnot, I think that would be totally fine. They'd probably be welcoming it because they're like, oh yeah, we'll probably get a free win out of this one. Little do they underestimate Clara. So anyway, no, it's a great question. I think this is something that you could really take a novice player under your wing. I'm actually thinking of the guy, kid, I call him a kid, but he's a freshman in high school now, down the street, who's already planning on coming over to organize my cards this summer in exchange for said cards, which is great. I think he's got enough experience under his belt and probably has the maturity. He's been down at the shop. He's played in some FNMs to really love doing this and have his head completely into the game. You know, it'd be really fun to ask him, hey, why do you want to draft that? What's this? And have that conversation. I think that's a lot of fun to do that. So yeah, this would be a really, really good set, I think, that you could take some player to the next level.
Quick marketing question, guys. With the Pro Tour 25 coming up later this year in Minneapolis being the first team Pro Tour, did Wizards pull the trigger too early on Battle Bond? Could they have used the hype from that team Pro Tour to launch the, quote, team set?
I think they did it in the correct order, because this is going to build up your kind of excitement and your knowledge of team events. Most people don't know how team events work, especially when you got something strange like team draft or team unified. So I think this builds up some hype. And looking at this, I keep forgetting about this, but this is a $4 a pack set. This is not a $7 or $10 a pack set. This is $4. You're going to get a lot of draft equity out of this. You know, Brian, you could pick up a box for probably $85 or so and then have people over and draft this, and I think this would be perfectly fine for you to pair up, you know, like I was saying earlier, an experienced player with like more of a novice player, and then everyone gets a very similar draft experience.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I don't think they pulled the trigger too soon, Sean. I feel like it just kind of lends to what we've been seeing as a trend in Magic, is more of a community idea, this team idea. How many different team, you know, tournaments have just exploded onto the scene? 5 years ago, you never saw a team tournament, or if you did, it was a very, very rare occurrence. Now that seems to be the norm. I think the Battle Bond idea is great, because Two-Headed Giant has always been a very popular format. It's just kind of hard to figure out exactly what the right mix of cards is, et cetera, because some sets just don't play well in the Two-Headed Giant. They might draft well, but Two-Headed Giant's a little tricky. But I think having a product that's marketed toward Two-Headed Giant just reinforces the fact that Magic is a communal game. You play it with your friends. You teach it to other people. You have a lot of back and forth. You don't have to just sit there going over things in your mind about things. You can talk to your partner. You kind of have the table talk about four people. Seems more like a poker game going on as opposed to a high stakes two guys left at the table at the end, you know, trying to play each other for the pot in the middle. So I really like that idea. I hope the culmination in August with the Pro Tour in Minneapolis for Magic's 25th anniversary proves that point, that Magic can become this more communal game as opposed to the tournament, you know, one-on-one personality versus personality. Maybe some of that edge is taken off a little bit.
The Tryhards and Their Significant Others Battle Bond Showdown. Which team would implode first? I got to think it's mine.
Yeah, definitely yours. You have no patience on the other side of your partner to carry you through. I hate to say it.
Yeah, we have two very smart, two very headstrong people who have been successful, and that would probably be fun and probably end spectacularly badly. So maybe we'll just go ahead and shelve that.
You know, I do have to say one thing. You mentioned the Pro Tour in Minneapolis. I looked at this. We had some scheduling stuff that's the GP we're going to, is the one the weekend before the Pro Tour. You guys realize the level of competition there is going to be astronomical because everyone's in town before the Pro Tour.
That's why we want the challenge.
We're going to probably go home crying in the fetal position.
And Matt, we're going to rely on your experience of how to assume the fetal position after a Magic beating in order to get us through
that. I'm good at that. That's one of my specialties.
Well, while you ponder that, can we have the court stenographer please let the record show that we have gaveled this Pro Tour Pick'em draft to order. This is something that we love doing here on Tryhards, picking, treating it as if it were fantasy football or fantasy baseball, and drafting our Pro Tour picks. Golf score is in effect, meaning the three picks with the lowest combined finishing spots takes down the crown. And the man wearing that crown after Rivals of Ixalan is Matt Hurley. It's going to be Matt and then me and then Brian. We each get three picks. We'll go Matt, Sean, Brian, and we'll rehash it at the end. After we make our picks, I want to talk a little bit about cards or strategies that we think are going to blossom at this Pro Tour. But with this round for Pro Tour Dominaria of Tryhards Pro Tour Pick'em, Matt, the clock is yours.
Ooh, I have so many good picks. If you look really on the points list, there's a lot of players that were within striking distance of taking down like the standard and constructed master. I think that's going to end up being a very important portion. It's probably going to be a vastly important portion of this. Now, we want to take this down with Ben Stark. Ben Stark, I think, is going to be a very high performer. I'm very excited to see what he comes up with. I mean, I've seen some of his drafts, and I think his limited is very, very, very strong. But I'm interested to see who he works with and how he's going to do on the constructed portion. I think he's going to do better than his normal average.
I would hope so if you took him number one overall. Ben Stark for Matt to get things started. I have a new mantra for this draft, and that is going to be the old KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. I think I've been overthinking some things when we do this. I looked at who's hot. I took into consideration their ability to break down a card pool, understand a metagame, and be good at both draft and constructed. And I'm going to take Paulo Vitor with my number one spot. So PVDDR into the barn for me. Brian, who you got?
Based only on his standard prowess and on how much he has put work into this new blue-white control deck that is kind of running rampant, I'm going with Brad Nelson in my number one pick. I think he is absolutely poised to kind of break through to that next level. Everybody knows about him, but to see him hold the trophy up to the camera and his very, very large frame, they're going to have to scoot back a little bit. I think he is ripe to be on top.
Matt, who's your number two?
Ooh, Brad Nelson, huh? I like that one. Good old Team Genesis. Sean, you did take PVD, and, you know, I almost first picked him. But I need to get somebody who has a lot of experience as my second pick. And I'm going to pick somebody off Ultimate Guard Pro Team. And that's going to be Reed Duke. He has the experience on that team. And he's going to really have a good Pro Tour experience here, and I think he's going to rank very, very highly.
Matt, you're going way out on a limb picking the number two ranked player in the world.
I know.
You're way out there.
He's got a wide variety of experience within their team, because I think teams are going to be very important this year.
I think you're onto something with that idea, and I am going to be heavy on top teams and their players, because I think, frankly, they get the best testing environments to get ready when they start to break these things down, and it'll probably be top heavy for all three of us. So Reed Duke leading off the second round for Matt. My number two pick, we got together back for the Pro Tour Ixalan for a top 100 finish. He got away from me for Rivals of Ixalan, but I'm getting him back. The better half of the brother combination, Corey Baumeister. For Team Sean, Brian, who you got in the number two slot?
Number two slot, I definitely had a solid Reed Duke pick. So, Hurley, I'll just ride your coattails all the way to the very end.
All right, you do
end.
That.
No, I've been leaning on the team idea as well, and there's a team out there that I feel has been doing really, really good work across streams, across kind of what they've been publishing, and there's a lot of really, really good things going on, and this is Team Connected Company, which is just a mishmash of people from across the globe, and I think that might play into their into the success. So with my second pick, I am going with Tomoharu Saito on Connected Company.
Okay.
Recapping round two, Reed Duke for Matt, Corey Baumeister for me, and Tomoharu Saito for Brian. Third and final round, gentlemen. Round out your teams. Matt, you're in the catbird seat.
So I'm going to talk real quick about why I didn't pick a couple people for this one. First, I did not pick Jeremy Dezani. I don't feel like, looking at what he's been posting, I don't feel like he's going to do well, but I don't feel like he has the... he just doesn't stand out to me as far as a player that's going to do like ridiculous things. Another one I'm not picking, and I really would love to pick him, is Sam Black. Sam Black, I'm not picking because of one particular card, and that's Goblin Chain Whirler. I think that normally Sam Black, this would be a tokens heavy, a really tokens heavy, really good deck. Like, he would come up with something unique, but Goblin Chain Whirler is just going to nail it to him if he's not careful, if he plays his normal style. I think I want to go with a kind of an outside pick. I've picked him before, Alexander Hain. I like Alexander Hain because I think he has a lot of unique views coming from some of the Canadian guys. And I really think that he's going to be able to work with those Canadian guys, come up with a unique deck or maybe a unique sideboard cards. He's never been a huge, huge innovator. Like, he's had some decks, you know, that were amazing, but I think he's just a solid, solid player, and I think he's going to be kind of a sleeper pick this year.
I look back at the history of the try-hard picks. We started this with Pro Tour Eldritch Moon. Dezani has never been picked.
Great. He's a great player. I'm not sure how he's going to do, and I just don't have that warm and fuzzy about him.
All right. We'll see if this turns out well. Alexander Hain to lead off round three for Matt. Well, you left me with quite a few options here on Sean's big board, and I don't know where I want to go right now, but I'm gonna go where my heart feels good. You guys know, right, that there's a control deck in Standard right now that's pretty good. You also know that there's some guy named Shota Yasuoka who's good with control decks.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and go with Shota in this spot. So give me Shota. This has been an on-again, off-again relationship with Shota and I. It's paid dividends a few times. A couple of times the police have had to been called to the trailer park because it got rough between us. But I think that the environment is right for the style of Magic that he capitalizes on. So Shota for me. Brian, who's your final pick?
This is tough, and you're absolutely right. There's a lot of different players that could come out of this, but I think what I've got to do is I've got to go with my gut, and I've got to go back to my roots a little bit. Guys, I'm going Marcio Carvalho. He's back on the Timbits train. He's not my number one. He's not my number two, but I'm giving him a chance to shine again. If he lets me down again, that's just going to have to be me crying in my beer all over.
Note, wow. No one picked world number one, Seth Manfield.
Yeah, give it to us, those who are listening, because if we fall flat on our faces, that's just a big oversight.
All right, recapping Team Matt Hurley, Ben Stark, Reed Duke, and Alexander Hain, Team Sean, PVDDR, Corey Baumeister, and Shota Yasuoka, and Team Tibbetts, Brad Nelson, Tamaharo Saito, and Marcio Carvalho. It'll be fun. Low score wins. So we'll have this coming up next week here on Tryhards. Guys, we've picked the players. Matt, you went first with the picks, so Brian, hit leadoff on this one. Is there a card or a strategy or a style that you're looking to break out?
I tell you what, Dominaria has given so many tools, and I can't imagine even trying to be a pro who's had to wade through the absolute meters of information about this to try to pick out, you know, is there new tech that's going to be broken? Is it just going to be a couple cards here and there with one of the established archetypes to take it down? Is it going to be adding a third color to something, you know, to do that? So for me, the big question, and this is totally biased, I love the blue-white control deck. To me, it's going to come down to, are you picking right by not including Gear Hulk, or is it Gear Hulk going to be the one that kind of clogs up the battlefield and takes down the day? I think that's a very, very big question for those blue-white control players, because you have to board very differently against the only Teferi win condition blue-white control versus the Gear Hulk blue-white control, which just gives you value after value after value. I'm really fascinated to see who chooses what and where they end up in that. Whether that even becomes a question on the Pro Tour, because someone else just might have something to blow it out of the water, that remains to be seen, but I'll be fascinated to see how it goes.
Matt, what are you expecting to break out this weekend?
I don't know. The problem is Kaladesh is such a powerful, powerful Bach. Red is going to be very powerful because of Abrades. I don't know if maybe the white-black vehicles deck's going to happen. You know, there's some green-black decks that are running around. There's even some like red white tokens decks that are like Path of Metal decks that are kind of running around. I'm not sure, but I think something like Liliana Death's Majesty, like maybe in like the green black old style constrictor decks, I think that's going to be powerful. I mean, I've seen one that looks super interesting to me that's running three Karn, two Lilianas, a Gonti, Jade Light Rangers, Scrap Heap Scroungers, and like Walking Ballistas, that style of stuff. I'm interested in this style of deck because I think that it has a good matchup against the control decks, and I think it can have a good matchup properly tuned against these red-black aggro decks. But what we're looking for here is our level 2 decks. Liliana Death's Majesty kind of checks a few of those boxes, although you just need to make sure that you have a way to eliminate those Heart of Kirin's and those other, you know, those style of cards. That can easily do it if it's in green black with Thrashing Brontodon. So I think that's where your cards are, and you need to be able to, you know, running four Vraska's Contempt seems like the right move in this format.
Well, green black also gives you Fatal Push, and I think that you're 2/3 of the way to the answer, at least the answer that I've come up with right now. And I love where your head is with green black, but I hearken back to John Finkel's Seasons Past green black control deck from Shadows Over Innistrad Pro Tour. And I think that was a long, grindy, slow deck that really sort of won the game based on the old rock style of attritioning your opponent out. There is a card that will allow you to do that now, and that's Muldrotha, the Gravetide. Matt, all the cards you mentioned, I was looking at all of those and how they would fit in with Muldrotha as redundancies. Liliana, Death's Majesty. You look at Jade Light Ranger. The value of casting Jade Light Ranger and then casting it again from your graveyard, that is so spectacularly difficult for control decks to overcome. I think Muldrotha is going to be one of the breakout cards at this Pro Tour.
I disagree with you on the Jade Light Rangers on why it's powerful. I don't think it's second casting. I think it's filtering your deck. If you have Multani in your deck, which I've seen these decks running, you have Multani in your deck, I think being able to put that into your graveyard and then you bring it back at a later time, I think that's extremely powerful. I'm wondering if maybe the style of decks isn't going to be, you know, it's not going to cause something like the gravestone, silent gravestone to kind of check up. So do you think the power of these decks is manipulating your graveyard, which currently is kind of untouched? Or do you think it's manipulating the top of your deck so that you can get the answers you need?
I think there are parallels between this deck and the old rock decks. In the current format, Jade Light Ranger, that's your Eternal Witness. from the old days, where it doesn't get you a card specifically, but it gets you value. You said it's not the first time you cast it or the second. It's what it allows you to do the top of your library. But being able to do that over and over with Meldrotha gives you so much value that you can keep going with it. You can play Vraska in those decks. You can play Karn in those decks. You can play Liliana, maybe not all of them together, but how do you want to attack the game? All of those things are available. Green gives you Brontodon, as you mentioned, which is fantastic right now. Black gives you Black's very good removal. And in this deck, I think blue is actually the light splash. You might only want it for Meldrotha and Search for Iskanta so that those two things kind of work together, depending on how heavy you want to go. So I think how it sets up is the ability to be repetitive without relying on any one card that eventually grinds a control deck to dust and gives you the ability to trade resources with the very aggressive decks.
You just put this thought into my head. What do you think about the blue-green Nissa? Because that's a low casting cost. It helps you with the deck manipulation, and it really helps you with putting pressure on the board as well.
Sideboard all-star. Sideboard okay. All-star, because you just can't afford that many things that don't impact the battlefield when you have mono red, you have black red, you have black white, you have snake decks. There are still plenty of decks that can kill you in a very short order. So I think she's a sideboard all-star situation. If you're playing any deck that can't readily pressure your life total from round one, she becomes fabulous.
I'm very curious about that, Sean, because what you're talking about is green-black being big. Green-black is it's a big deck. It's a mid-range deck. You're looking to go mid to late game so you can keep getting that value back. So what about decks like the white-black aggro decks, the red-black vehicles decks? Is that something that if people choose wrong, those are the decks that are going to punish you?
Oh, absolutely. You have black's good removal, but you can't play all of it. You have to pick and choose. So do you play Fatal Push to help you navigate through turns 1-3 and then start taking over with your heavier hitters on turn 4. So these are the choices that you have to make depending on what you think you're going to see. This is where I think Doomfall becomes very good, because you can take a card out of a hand against a control deck, but you can also take away a hard-to-deal-with creature on the other side of the board, a Fatal Push, and then a Doomfall, and suddenly you're sitting pretty again. And when you're talking about being able to scale your deck down against aggressive decks, black and green do that very well. And when you scale up, you have Gonti, you have Carnage Tyrant. I mean, these are problem cards for quote-unquote control decks.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And so if you've got that, I could see the white-black aggro deck being a very, very good choice, because I think it gives you so many different tools and so many different options. The one thing I will say about the control decks, they've got to build it in one way to take advantage of whatever their win condition is. Are you going to do the very, very value-centered, or are you just looking to, you know, keep the board absolutely as clean as possible and then just kind of grind out your opponent via Teferi? If you do that, white and black can sideboard very, very well into dealing with either of those things. And I think that's going to be the big case, I guess, if we do get into kind of an aggro versus control matchup in the top 8 or even in the finals. I'll be very, very curious to see how the players kind of navigate those very basic ideas of what Magic is and who comes out on top.
Hit us up, thetryhards3@gmail.com, if you think we're way off base, or if you want to join one of the teams, Team Matt, Team Sean, Team Brian, and see how it goes for the Pro Tour this weekend. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. Matt, are you going to predict some movement based on this Pro Tour?
I'm looking at some BattleBond spoilers. Lavissa Cold Eyes. This is currently about an $8 foil. I'm thinking you should buy these. They're very, very low stock. There's not many Cold Snap foils out there. This is going to be a very popular commander. And then you just get splash bonuses from Barbarians and Berserkers if something else pops up in the future. But these have not been printed in foil since Cold Snap. So I think you give it a month, this is going to be a $40 or $50 foil. Easy. Pick these up, hold on to them for a month or two, and I bet you these are very, very high.
Lavissa Cold Eyes, this week's In the Elevator here on TryHards. That brings us up to this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. Brian, we gave away a lot of tech after our picks for the Pro Tour this weekend. What else are we going to get into?
Well, what else we're going to brew is we're going to take one of the most exciting cards that I think is showing up in BattleBond, and we're going to figure out exactly where this goes, gentlemen. I'm looking at the black card, Stunning Reversal. This is a one black, three other instant. The next time you would lose the game this turn, instead, draw seven cards and your life total becomes one. Exile Stunning Reversal. There is so much going on with this card, guys. I don't know if it's going to be the most horrible card ever printed or if it's going to just be knockout blow to some of the combo decks I can think of in Legacy. I'm looking at you, Storm. This is something that I'm really, really intrigued with, and I'm very, very curious to see where you're going to take this. Sean, I'm going to start with you. Stunning Reversal.
If this was a game of Hangman, I would only need three spaces to get it done. Give me an X, give me an O, give me a P. Pox. This is what Pox has needed for quite a while. It is a hard answer to being comboed out. And for a deck that plays almost exclusively at sorcery speed, having an instant that can both protect you and do the one thing that Pox occasionally has a hard time with, which is keeping up with the card draw and selection of the blue base decks, refilling your hand, this is going to be a win because Pox wants to play the long game. A lot of decks in Legacy won't want it because it's four mana. Pox gets to four mana routinely. So I think this is a card that's going to be probably a one of in the main and maybe another in the sideboard. I saw this right away and got a big smile on my face because I've got a couple flex spots in Pox, and this is going in one of them.
Hurley, what about you? Are you high on this card, or do you feel like this is just going to kind of start gathering dust there as a good idea, but not something that's going to see a whole lot of play?
So I think this is going to be a weird deck in Modern, and I'm not exactly sure how the deck's going to play out, but you have like some decks that are playing the, the Phyrexian card that you get poison counters instead of losing the game. You get Angel's Grace, cards like that. There's something in Modern that this would work with. You cast this with Final Fortune, where it's like double red, take another turn, lose the game. Maybe you cast this with that. I don't know, but there's a combo deck out there somewhere. I looked at it. I'm like, this has a lot of build around me potential, but I'm just not sure where it fits. But Sean, I really like your Pox idea. But I just think that it gets ripped apart with Duress as well.
I'm very, very curious to see how this is going to have an effect in Legacy, because I think that's obviously where it's going to be the most felt. There's so many fast decks that can win on turn two, turn three, and if you can get the mana cost, four is prohibitive, but I feel like this is something that if you can get to that point in the game and you can have this kind of waiting, yes, it is open to Duress early, you're not wrong about that, but it's also going to be one of those things. What are you going to take? Are you going to take the Fluster Storm? Or are you going to take this card? I see this as kind of an anti-storm card, possibly. I'm very curious to play against it. I hope somebody uses it against me and see if it actually can work. Or maybe I can be the lucky person who gets to jump up at the table and be like, yep, I did it. I absolutely did it, guys. And I won.
Stunning Reversal. This week's 3 minutes to Brew. Here on Tryhards. What'd you do to get better at Magic this week? For me, it was continuing to work on the Cycle Mastery deck in Standard. By the way, if I can get a final addition to tech I think might break out at the Pro Tour this weekend, somebody's going to try Lich's Mastery, and we'll see if it goes over or not.
Oh, yeah.
Continuing That's awesome. To work on your deck, your project, and learning, changing it incrementally, and being unafraid to say, that was a bad change. I did that this week. I went from three Gideons to two, took away a couple of cyclers, and figured out that, you know what, that's really kind of what made the deck go. So you have to be able to take those chances, roll them back, whatever the card is in your particular deck, don't be afraid. No sacred cows, right? We're just looking for the best possible deck. You don't have to have any one thing to make it work. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
As I'm continuing to start building Nykvit in Legacy, and it's been an absolute blast. I've been going through so many different lists and so many different builds. I think that's part of it, to your point, Sean, of kind of like, you know, well, I'm going to have to try these out, obviously, before I figure out what's really, really good. The other thing I would like to say that I did to get better at Magic was, as I was watching SCG coverage, Cedric and Patrick, they take questions. And they answer questions on the air, basically, about this, that, and the other. And sometimes they're really, really good. Sometimes they're like, nah, whatever. Somebody wrote in and asked Patrick specifically his opinion about the reserve list. And if you want a very, very good, I won't say succinct, but a very good rundown of my feelings on the reserve list, which I've never been able to put into words, go to round five of the SCG Minneapolis Open, and Patrick just kind of goes off for about 5 minutes about the reserve list and about basically what it means to have a trading card game and what it means to have a reserve list. And if they would have not done it, that probably would have been the best idea. However, you can't kind of turn back time. And so therefore, this is where we're at. I thought it was a fantastic screed, kind of shutting down the people who are saying we got to get rid of the reserve list because of this, that, and the other. It really made me think about, huh, what game am I really a part of? Is this something that is really in it for the financials? Is it something that I just play for the love of? Do I look at all of this stuff around here and I just kind of think of myself as Gollum and I just want to hoard everything that I own? You know, what's the best way to be the ambassador to the community and what's the best for the game overall? What would I have to give up and all those kind of things? So it brings up a lot of different questions about this game, but I thought it was really, really well done by Patrick.
I can't think of the person's name off the top of my head, but there was someone in the community doing the very valuable work of putting together the between rounds highlights from the SCG tour and making those available on YouTube. So they essentially take out the magic and it ends up looking like a little bit of a talk show, but that's the best way to do it. Check it on YouTube. Just check for SCG and this weekend's outing, which was in Minneapolis. Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
While I was out in the disc golf course, I did actually get to talk Magic and a lot of Magic theory. It was nice to take a break. This weekend, there's the SCG Con going on. Some people are going to that. I even thought about going to Origins as well, because Origins is about 3 hours away. So I thought about going up for the day and playing a little Magic, but there's a lot of Magic stuff going on this weekend. So kind of torn on what to do, but I am glad I didn't play any because I needed like a week-long break.
Yeah, that SCG Con is featuring No Ban List Modern. Get your skull clamps out because this is going to be crazy. Should be
ridiculous, interesting
coming off in the next couple of weeks. That's it for us. Enjoy the Pro Tour this weekend. Somebody's going to have bragging rights. Oh, you brave soul. See who it is on the next episode of Try Hards.